In no other city shall there be either altar or temple, for God is one, and the race of the Hebrews is one. Whoever blasphemes God shall be stoned, hung up for the day, and buried without honor and out of sight. Let those from the ends of the land, held by the Hebrews, gather 3 times a year at the city appointed for the temple, to give thanks to God for benefits already received, and to entreat him for those to come, and, meeting and feasting together, to grow affectionate toward one another. For it is good that men of the same race, sharing the same way of life, should not be strangers to each other, and this will come about for them through such mingling, as sight and converse plant the memory of it in them, whereas, remaining apart from one another, they will come to be reckoned wholly foreign to each other. Let there also be, besides the tithe you have ordained to be given to the priests and Levites, a tithe of the produce set apart for you, which may be sold in your own districts, but is to serve for the feasts and sacrifices in the holy city. For it is right that you should enjoy, in honor of the giver, a portion of what the earth yields, which God granted you to possess. Sacrifices are not to be paid for out of a harlot's wages, for God takes no pleasure in anything born of outrage, and such a gift is no better than the shame it brings upon the body. Nor, likewise, is anything to be sacrificed to God from a fee taken for the mating of a dog, whether a hunting dog or a sheepdog. Let no one blaspheme the gods which other cities honor, nor plunder foreign temples, nor take any object dedicated to any god, whoever he may be. Let none of you wear a garment woven of wool and linen together, for that has been reserved for the priests alone. When the multitude has gathered at the holy city for the sacrifices, once every 7 years, at the coming of the Feast of Tabernacles, let the high priest stand on a raised platform, from which he can be heard, and read the laws to all. And let neither women nor children be kept from hearing, nor even the slaves. For it is good that, once inscribed on their souls and kept in memory, they should never be able to be erased. In this way they will commit no wrong, since they will not be able to plead ignorance of what the laws prescribe. And the laws themselves will have great force against wrongdoers, since these have had foretold to them what they will suffer, and have had inscribed on their souls, through hearing, what is commanded them, so that the choice set before them is always present within them, a choice which, if they disregard it, leaves them guilty of the wrong and the author of their own punishment. Let the children too learn first of all the laws, the finest lesson, and the cause of happiness. Twice each day, at its beginning and when the hour turns toward sleep, let all bear witness to God of the gifts he granted them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt, since thanksgiving is by nature owed both as repayment for what has already come to pass and as encouragement for what is still to come. And let them inscribe on their doorposts the greatest of the benefits God has done them, and let each display on his arms whatever can signify the power of God and the goodwill he bears them, inscribed upon the head and the arm, so that his eager care for them may be seen from every side. Let there be appointed in each city 7 men who have practiced virtue and zeal for justice above others, and to each such office let 2 assistants be given from the tribe of the Levites. Let those allotted to judge in the cities be held in every honor, so that none may be free to speak ill of them or show insolence in their presence, out of a deference toward men of standing that keeps people, in effect, from showing contempt for God. Let the judges have full authority to pronounce as seems right to them, unless someone can show that they took money to pervert justice or bring some other charge by which it is proven that they did not judge rightly. For it is not fitting that they should render their judgments openly, either to gratify gain or out of regard for rank, but that they should set justice above everything. In acting otherwise, God himself would be held in contempt and made weaker than those to whom, out of fear of their power, a man assigns the verdict as already decided. For the strength of God is justice, and whoever grants that as a favor to men of rank makes them more powerful than God. If the judges cannot see their way to a verdict on the matters brought before them, and many such cases arise among men, let them refer the case to the holy city, where the high priest, the prophet, and the council of elders shall assemble and pronounce what seems right. Let no single witness be believed, but 3, or at the least 2, whose testimony is made trustworthy by their past lives. Let there be no testimony from women, on account of the frivolity and boldness of their sex. nor let slaves testify either, because of the ignobility of their spirit, since it is likely that, whether for gain or out of fear, they would not testify truly. If anyone is convicted of bearing false witness and is believed, let him suffer whatever the one he testified against was to have suffered. If a murder has been committed in some district and the doer is not found, nor is anyone suspected of having killed out of hatred, let the people search for him with great diligence, offering rewards for information. And if no one comes forward, let the magistrates of the cities near the district where the murder was committed, together with the council of elders, assemble and measure the distance from the place where the corpse lies. Whichever city proves nearest, let its officials buy a heifer and bring it to a ravine, to ground unsuited to the plow or to planting, and there cut the tendons of the heifer's neck. And taking water for the washing of hands, let the priests, the Levites, and the elders of that city, over the head of the heifer, cry aloud that their hands are clean of the murder, that they neither did the deed nor were present when it was done. And let them call upon God to be merciful and to let no such dreadful thing befall the land again. Aristocracy, then, and the life lived under it, is best. And let no longing for another form of government take hold of you, but cherish this one, and, keeping the laws as your masters, do all things according to them. For it is enough that God be your leader. But if a longing for a king should come upon you, let him be of your own race, and let him have care for justice and for the rest of virtue at all times. Let him yield the greater part of his judgment to the laws and to God, and do nothing apart from the high priest and the opinion of the council of elders. Let him not take many wives, nor pursue an abundance of money or of horses, since, once he has these in plenty, he will grow arrogant toward the laws. And should he show eagerness for any of these things, let him be prevented, so that he does not become more powerful than is good for you. Let it not be permitted to move the boundaries of land, whether one's own or that of others with whom you are at peace. Let a man guard against removing them as he would a fixed decree of God, set for all time, since from this arise wars and civil strife, as those who covet more wish to press beyond their boundaries. And those who shift a boundary are not far from also transgressing the laws. If a man has planted land, and the trees bear fruit before 4 years have passed, let him neither bring first fruits from it to God nor use it himself, for it was not brought forth by them in due season, but forced out of nature before its time, and so is fit neither to be offered to God nor used by its own owner. In the fourth year let him harvest the whole yield, for then it is ripe, and gathering it, let him bring it to the holy city, and there, together with the tithe of his other produce, consume it in feasting with his friends, together with orphans and widowed women. From the fifth year on, let the owner be free to enjoy the fruit of the trees for himself. Land planted with vines is not to be sown with grain as well. Let it be content to nourish this one crop and be spared the labors of the plow. Let land be plowed with oxen, and let no other animal be yoked together with them, but let each kind of beast be put to the plowing. Let the seed be pure and unmixed, and let no one sow two or three kinds together, for nature does not delight in the union of things unlike. Nor let anyone put together animals of different kinds, for fear that this small and trivial beginning might, through imitation, spread contempt for the proper order even to human affairs. Nothing of this sort should be permitted, lest some distortion of the Constitution creep in by way of such precedents. The laws leave nothing, even the smallest matters, unattended, since they know how to provide for a people's blamelessness in everything. Those who reap and gather in the harvest should not glean it clean, but should leave some of the sheaves for those who lack the means of life, as a godsend for their sustenance. Likewise, at the grape harvest, they should leave the gleanings of the vine for the poor, and of the olive crop, leave something to be gathered by those who have none of their own to draw on. The owners will not gain so much from harvesting their own crops down to the last measure as the gratitude they will win from the needy. And God will make the earth more eager to bring forth its fruits for those who take thought not only of their own advantage, but also of feeding others. Nor should men binding sheaves for thrashing muzzle the oxen on the thrashing floor, for it is not just to keep from the fruit those who labored alongside in producing it. Nor, when fruit is ripe, should travelers on the road be prevented from picking it. Rather, they should be allowed to eat their fill as if it were their own, whether they are natives or strangers. the owners rejoicing to let them share in the season's bounty, only they may carry none of it away. Nor, at the vintage, should those bringing the grapes to the winepress stop passers-by from eating some as they go. For it is unjust to grudge those who desire a share of goods that have come into the world by God's will, at the very time when the season is at its height and hastening to pass. This would be pleasing to God, even if out of shame some hesitate to touch the fruit and must be urged to take it, Israelites as partners, and, by kinship, as owners in their own right. And foreigners who have arrived from elsewhere are entitled to the guest gifts of what God has provided them in their season. What a person allows others to take out of kindness should not be reckoned a loss, since God supplies abundance of good things not for the owners alone to enjoy, but so that they may generously share with others as well, wishing in this way to make known, through great surplus given to others besides, his own goodwill toward the people of Israel and his provision for their prosperity. Whoever acts against these rules shall receive 39 lashes of the public scourge, though a free man, and shall bear this most shameful punishment for having enslaved himself to gain and dishonored his own standing. For it is fitting that you, who have known hardship in Egypt and in the wilderness, should take thought for others in like circumstances, and that you who have found prosperity through God's mercy and providence should extend that same mercy, out of a like experience of suffering, to those in need now. Of the two tithes which I have already said are to be paid each year, one goes to the Levites, the other toward the festal banquets. A third, in addition to these, is to be set aside every third year for distribution to those in want, widowed women and orphaned children. Whatever of the season's produce first comes to hand for each person, let them bring it to the temple, and having blessed God for the land that bore it, which he granted them to possess, let them perform the sacrifices the law commands them to offer, and give the first fruits of these to the priests. When a man has done this, and has brought all the tithes together with those for the Levites and for the festal banquets, and is about to return home, let him stand before the sanctuary and give thanks to God for having freed them from the outrage of the Egyptians and given them a good and abundant land to enjoy, calling him to witness that he has paid the tithes according to the laws of Moses, and asking God to be gracious and merciful to him always and to all the Hebrews in common, preserving the good things he has given them and adding to them whatever more he can bestow. Let men marry, when they come of age for marriage, freeborn virgins of good parentage. He who does not intend to take a virgin should not join himself to a woman already living with another, corrupting her and wronging her former husband. Slave women are not to be married by free men, even if some are driven to it by passion. They should master their desire out of a sense of propriety befitting their standing. Nor, further, should marriage be contracted with a prostitute, whose sacrifices at the wedding God would not accept because of the degradation of her body. For children will have free and upright characters, inclined to virtue, only if they are not born of shameful unions or of a couple who came together out of unfree desire rather than freedom. If a man, having betrothed a woman as a virgin, afterward finds she is not such, he may bring suit, accusing her himself and using whatever evidence he has for proof, while the girl's father or her brother, or whoever after these is judged nearest of kin, shall speak in her defense. If the girl is judged in the trial not to have done wrong, she shall live with her accuser, who shall have no power to send her away, except if she gives him serious grounds which he could not even answer. But whoever brings a charge and slander rashly and recklessly shall pay a fine, receiving 40 lashes less one, and shall pay 50 shekels to her father. But if he proves the young woman corrupted, then, if she is of the common people, for not having guarded her virginity chastely until lawful marriage, she shall be stoned to death. But if she is of priestly descent, she shall be burned alive. If a man has two wives, and one is held in great honor and affection, whether for love or beauty or some other reason, while the other is held in less regard, and the son born of the beloved wife, though younger than the son born of the other, claims the rights of the firstborn because of his father's affection for his mother, so as to receive a double portion of the paternal estate. For this is what I have ordained in the laws. This shall not be allowed. For it is unjust that the one who is older by birth should be deprived of what is owed him, because his mother is less favored in his father's regard than the other. Whoever seduces a girl betrothed to another, if he persuaded her and gained her consent to the seduction, shall die together with her. For both are equally wicked, the one for persuading her to submit willingly to the most shameful act and to prefer it to free and lawful marriage, the other for letting herself be persuaded, out of pleasure or gain, into disgrace. But if he happens upon her alone and forces her, with no one present to help her, he alone shall die. He who seduces a virgin not yet betrothed shall marry her himself. But if the girl's father does not wish to give her to him in marriage, he shall pay 50 shekels as the price of the outrage. If a man wishes to divorce the wife who lives with him, for whatever reason, and there could be many such reasons among men, he must certify in writing that he will never again live with her. Only in this way will she gain the right to live with another man, for before this it is not permitted. But if she is mistreated by that second husband as well, and after his death the first husband wishes to marry her again, she may not return to him. If a man dies leaving his wife childless, his brother shall marry her, and shall name the child born of this union after the dead man, to raise him as heir to the estate. This will also benefit the public good, since households will not die out and property will remain with kinsmen, and it will bring relief to the women in their misfortune, as they will remain joined to the nearest of their former husband's kin. But if the brother does not wish to marry her, the woman shall go before the council of elders and declare that although she wished to remain in the household and bear children by him, he refuses to accept her, thereby dishonoring the memory of his dead brother. When the council of elders asks him for what reason he is unwilling to marry her, whether he gives a slight reason or a weighty one, let him state it. Then the woman shall untie her brother-in-law's sandals and spit in his face, saying that he deserves this treatment from her for having dishonored the memory of the departed. He shall leave the council bearing this reproach for the rest of his life, and she may marry whomever of her suitors she wishes. If a man takes captive a virgin or a married woman and wishes to live with her, he may not first touch her bed and have intercourse with her until she has shaved her head, put on mourning dress, and lamented her relatives and friends who fell in the battle, so that having satisfied her grief for them, she may then turn to feasting and marriage. For it is right and just in taking her to bear children to have regard for her wishes, rather than to pursue one's own pleasure alone and neglect what is owed to her feelings. When 30 days of mourning have passed, for wise women find these sufficient for tears over their dearest ones, then he may proceed to the marriage. But if, once his desire is satisfied, he comes to disdain having her as a wife, he shall no longer have the power to enslave her, but she shall go wherever she wishes, free to do so. As for young men who despise their parents and do not give them due honor, whether out of shame or out of arrogant self-assurance, treating them with contempt, first let the fathers admonish them with words. For fathers are competent judges over their sons, saying that they did not come together for pleasure's sake, nor to increase their wealth by pooling what each possessed, but in order to have children who would care for them in old age and from whom they would receive what they need. That when the son was born, they raised him with joy and the deepest gratitude to God, sparing nothing that seemed useful for his welfare and education in the best things. But now, since forgiveness must be granted for the offenses of the young, let it be enough that you have already shown so little regard for the honor due us, and turn now to more prudent conduct, reflecting also that God is harsh toward those who dare such things against their parents, since he himself is father of the whole human race and feels himself dishonored along with those who bear the same title, when they do not receive from their children what is owed them. And the law becomes an implacable punisher of such offenses. May you never have to experience it. If by these means the young man's stubbornness is cured, let him be released from the reproach of his past faults. For in this way the lawgiver will have done well, and the fathers will count themselves fortunate in never seeing a son or daughter punished. But if their words and the instruction they give prove to have taught the son nothing about self-control, and he makes the laws his implacable enemies by persisting again and again in outrages against his parents, then, led out of the city by these same parents with the crowd following, he shall be stoned, and having lain all day exposed to the sight of all, shall be buried at night. In the same way shall be dealt with all others condemned to death under the laws by whatever means. Enemies too are to be buried, and not even one corpse should lie deprived of burial beyond what justice requires in exacting punishment. No Hebrew shall be permitted to lend to another Hebrew at interest, neither in food nor in drink. For it is not just to make profit from the misfortunes of one's own countrymen, but rather, in helping him in his need, to consider as one's gain his gratitude and the reward that will come from God for such kindness. Those who have received either money or any produce, wet or dry, when their affairs prosper by God's favor, should repay their creditors gladly, bringing it back as though depositing what was their own, to be had again should they themselves ever be in need. But if the borrowers show no shame about repayment, the creditor should not go to the debtor's house to seize a pledge before a judgment has been rendered in the matter, but should ask for the pledge from outside, and the debtor should bring it out himself, raising no objection to the one who comes to him supported by the law. If the man from whom the pledge is taken is well off, the lender may keep it until repayment. But if he is poor, the lender must return it before sunset, especially if the pledge is a cloak, so that he may have it to sleep in, since by nature God shows mercy to the poor. A millstone and the tools that go with it may not be taken as a pledge, so that people are not deprived of the very instruments for preparing their food, nor suffer some worse misfortune through want. For kidnapping a man, the penalty shall be death. Whoever steals gold or silver shall repay double. A man who kills someone caught stealing from his house shall go unpunished, even if the thief was caught breaking through a wall. Whoever steals livestock shall pay fourfold the value as penalty, except for an ox, for which he shall pay fivefold. He who cannot afford to pay the fine imposed shall become a slave to those against whom the judgment was given. A man sold to a fellow countryman shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh shall be released free. But if, having had children by a slave woman in his master's household, he wishes because of his affection and attachment to his own to remain a slave, then, when the year of Jubilee arrives, the 50th year, he shall be freed, taking with him his children and his wife as free persons as well. If a man finds gold or silver on the road, he should seek out the one who lost it, and having announced the place where he found it, return it, not supposing that profit gained from another's loss is a good thing. The same applies to livestock a man comes upon wandering in the wilderness. If the owner is not found at once, he should keep it with him, calling God to witness that he does not intend to keep what belongs to another. One must not pass by animals in distress, fallen in the mud in bad weather, but should help save them, treating the effort as one's own concern. One should also show the way to those who do not know it, and not, seeking a laugh for oneself, hinder another's need by misdirection. Likewise, no one should curse a deaf man or one who is absent. If someone strikes another in a fight, without using iron, and the man dies at once, let the killer be punished with the same fate he inflicted. But if the injured man is carried home, and after being ill for several days, then dies, the one who struck him is innocent. But if he recovers and has spent a great deal on his medical care, the striker must repay everything the sick man spent during his confinement, and whatever he gave the physicians. If a man kicks a pregnant woman and she miscarries, he is to be fined by the judges, on the ground that he has diminished the population by destroying what was in her womb, and money is also to be given to the woman's husband by him. But if she dies from the blow, he too must die, the law demanding that he pay a life for a life. No Israelite may possess a drug that causes death or any other harm. If a man is found in possession of one, he is to be put to death, suffering the very thing he had prepared to inflict on those against whom the drug was made. Whoever maims another is to suffer the same, being deprived of the very member he deprived another of, unless the injured man is willing to accept money instead, the law making the sufferer himself the arbiter of a value for what has happened to him, and permitting this if he does not wish to be too harsh. An ox that gores with its horns is to be slaughtered by its owner. But if it kills someone on the thrashing floor, it is to be stoned to death and judged unfit even for food. And if the owner is shown to have known its temper beforehand and failed to guard against it, he too must die, as responsible for the death of the man killed by the ox. If the ox kills a male or female slave, it is to be stoned, and the owner of the ox must pay 30 shekels to the master of the slave killed. But if an ox is struck in this way and dies, both the dead ox and the one that struck it are to be sold, and their owners are to divide the price between them. Those who dig a well or a cistern must take care to keep it covered with boards, not in order to keep anyone from drawing water, but so that no one is in danger of falling in. Whoever's animal falls into such a pit, left uncovered, and is killed, must pay its value to the owner. Roofs, too, must have a parapet around them, which, serving in place of a wall, will keep people from rolling off and being killed. Whoever receives a deposit must guard it as something sacred and holy, and no man or woman should be so bold as to defraud the one who trusted him, even if he stood to gain an untold amount of gold, thinking there is no one to expose him. For, in general, every man ought to act rightly out of regard for his own conscience, and, content with himself as witness, do everything that will win him praise from others. But above all, he should regard God, from whom no wrongdoer is hidden. If, without any scheming, the one entrusted with the deposit should lose it, let him come before the seven judges and swear by God that nothing was lost through his own will or wrongdoing, nor through his making use of any part of it, and so let him depart without blame. But if he made use of even the smallest part of what was entrusted to him and happened to lose the rest, let him be condemned to repay everything he received. The same rule applies to wages. Whoever withholds the pay of those who work with their own bodies is to be hated for it. A poor man's wages must never be withheld by those who know that God has given him this in place of land and other property. Nor should payment be delayed, but it must be paid out on the very same day, since God does not wish the laborer to go without the benefit of what he has toiled for. Children are not to be punished for the wrongs of their fathers. Rather, because of their own virtue, they deserve pity all the more for having had wicked fathers, rather than hatred for having sprung from base ones. Nor, indeed, should fathers be held to account for the sins of their sons, since the young, in their arrogance about being taught, disregard much of our instruction. Avoid the galley and shun association with them, since they have deprived themselves of their manhood and of the fruit of childbearing which God gave to men for the increase of the race. Drive them away as men who, on the occasion of the slaughter of their children, have in addition destroyed the very cause of it. For it is clear that, their souls having become effeminate, they have transformed their bodies to match, and so too with anything regarded as monstrous by those who see it. It is not permitted to make eunuchs, whether of men or of any other living creatures. Let this, then, be for you a peaceable ordering of the laws for your commonwealth, and may God graciously grant that its order remain free of faction, and may there never be a time that alters any of these things or turns them to their opposite. But since it is inevitable that human affairs fall into troubles and dangers, whether unwilled or chosen, come, let us add a few further regulations concerning these as well, so that, knowing beforehand what must be done, you may be well provided for when safety is needed, and not, seeking at the moment what must be done, fall unprepared into the crisis. May God grant that you possess, unmolested by war, the land he has given you, since you scorn hardship and have trained your souls to virtue, and may he grant this to you as its possessors, with neither foreigners campaigning against it to your harm, nor civil strife taking hold of you, strife under which, acting contrary to your fathers, you would destroy what they held dear. And may you continue to use the laws which God, having judged them good, has handed down to you. Whatever act of war you undertake, now among yourselves or later among your children, let it be carried out beyond your own borders. When about to make war, send an embassy and heralds to those who are deliberately your enemies, for before resorting to arms it is good to use words with them, showing that, though you have a large army and horses and weapons, and before all these a God who is gracious and your ally, you nevertheless ask not to be forced to make war on them, nor, by taking what is theirs, to acquire gain you do not wish for. And if they are persuaded, it is right for you to keep the peace. But if, trusting in their own strength, they choose to do wrong, lead an army against them, using God as your supreme commander, and electing as his lieutenant one man who excels in valor. For a multitude of commanders is bound to be an obstacle to swift action and naturally harms those who resort to it. Lead an army purged of all whose bodies lack strength and whose souls lack courage, having weeded out the cowardly, so that they do not, by turning to flight in the midst of the action, help the enemy. let those who have recently built houses, who have not yet had a year's enjoyment of them, and those who have planted but not yet tasted the fruit, remain at home, as well as those newly betrothed or newly married, lest, longing for these things and clinging to life in order to enjoy them, they turn cowardly toward the women. Once you have made camp, take care that you do nothing improper. When besieging a city and lacking timber for building siege engines, do not strip the land by cutting down its cultivated trees, but spare them, considering that they exist for the benefit of mankind, and that a tree, if it could find a voice, might justly plead with you that, having done nothing to cause the war, it should not suffer unjustly, since, had it the power, it would have moved elsewhere. Once you have prevailed in battle, kill those who resisted you in arms, but spare the rest to pay you tribute, except for the nation of the Canaanites. These must be utterly wiped out, household and all. Above all, guard in your battles against a woman wearing a man's equipment or a man wearing a woman's dress. Such, then, was the constitution Moses left behind, and he handed down the laws, already written 40 years before, about which we shall speak in another work. On the following days, for he kept the assembly in continuous session, he pronounced blessings on them, and curses on those who would not live according to the laws, but would transgress what was laid down in them. Then he read to them a poem in hexameter verse, which he also left behind in a book kept in the temple, containing a prediction of things to come, according to which everything has happened and continues to happen, he having erred from the truth in nothing. These books, then, he handed down to the priests, along with the ark, in which he had placed the 10 words written on 2 tablets, and the tabernacle. He charged the people, once they had conquered the land and settled in it, not to forget the outrage of the Amalekites, but to march against them and exact vengeance for the wrongs they had done them while they were still in the wilderness. And once they had taken the land of the Canaanites and destroyed all its population as was fitting, to set up an altar facing the rising sun, not far from the city of Shechem, between 2 mountains, Gerizim on the right and the one called Ebal on the left, and to divide the army by 6 tribes to stand on each of the 2 mountains, with the Levites and priests along with them. Those stationed on Gerizim were first to pray for the best blessings on those who were zealous in the worship of God and the keeping of the laws and who did not disobey what Moses had said, while the others were to say, Amen. And then, when these in turn offered their prayers, the first group was to say, Amen to them. Next, in the same way, curses were to be pronounced on those who would transgress, each side echoing the other's words to confirm what was said. Moses himself wrote down the blessings and the curses, so that their memory should never be lost through time, and at his death he had them inscribed on the altar, on either side, where, he says, the people stood and offered sacrifice and burnt offerings, and after that day brought no other offering there, since it was not lawful. This, then, is what Moses ordained, and the Hebrew nation continues to this day to act in accordance with it. On the next day he gathered the people, together with their wives and children, into an assembly, so that even the slaves were present, and made them swear an oath to keep the laws and to become exact reckoners of God's purpose, allowing nothing, neither favoring kinship, nor yielding to fear, nor supposing any other cause whatsoever to be more powerful than the keeping of the laws, to lead them to transgress them. But if any of their own blood should attempt to confound and overthrow their constitution, or any city should do so, to defend the laws, both together and individually, and once they had prevailed over such people, to tear them up from their foundations, and, if possible, leave not even the ground of the reckless offenders. But if they were too weak to exact the penalty, to make it clear that this at least was not happening by their own choice. And the people took the oath. He also taught them how their sacrifices might be more pleasing to God, and how, when they went out to war, they should use the stones as a sign, as I have already explained. And Joshua also prophesied, in Moses' presence. Then, reviewing everything he had done for the people's safety, in war and in peace alike, in framing the laws and in furnishing the good order of their commonwealth, he foretold, since the divine had revealed it to him, that if they transgressed in their worship of him, they would experience misfortunes. Their land would be filled with the weapons of enemies, their cities razed, the temple burned down, and sold into slavery, they would serve men who would show no pity for their misfortunes, and they would repent of this to no useful purpose. Yet God, who created you, will restore the cities to your citizens, and the temple as well, and this loss of them will happen not once, but many times. Having urged Joshua to lead the army out against the Canaanites, since God would cooperate in whatever he undertook, and having acclaimed the whole multitude, he said, "Since I am going to our forefathers, and God has appointed this day for my departure to them, I acknowledge, while I am still alive and present with you, my gratitude to him for the providence he has shown you, not only in delivering you from your troubles, but also in the gift of better things. And because, in all my labor and in all the thought I gave, with all my mind, to your improvement, he struggled alongside me and showed himself gracious to you in everything. Indeed, it was he, rather than I, who gave the direction of your affairs and granted their successful outcomes, using me as his lieutenant and servant in the things by which he wished to benefit our people. In return for this, I thought it right, as I depart, to bless in advance the power of God, who will care for your future as well, myself rendering this debt owed to him, and leaving it in your memory that it is fitting for you to revere and honor him and the laws, in return for all he has given and, remaining gracious, will continue to give, the finest gift you can guard. As for a lawgiver made human, he is a formidable enemy to those who insult his laws and treat them as vain. May you never experience the anger of God on account of laws neglected, laws which he himself begot and gave to you." When Moses had said this, near the end of his life, and had prophesied to each of the tribes, together with blessings, the things that in fact came to pass, the people broke into tears, so that even the women, beating their breasts, showed the grief they felt for him at his coming death. The children, too, wept still more, as being too weak to master their sorrow, since even at their age they understood his virtue and his great deeds. There was, as it were, a contest of grief between the young and the old. The older, knowing what kind of guardian they were being deprived of for the future, mourned on that account, while the younger grieved both for this reason, and because it fell to them to be parted from him before they had properly tasted his virtue. One could gauge the extremity of the multitude's wailing and lamentation from what happened to the lawgiver himself. For though he had been persuaded, throughout his whole life, that one should not be downcast in the face of approaching death, since this happens by the will of God and the law of nature, he was overcome, by what the people were doing, into weeping himself. As he made his way from there, to the place where he was to vanish from sight, all followed him in tears, and Moses, waving his hand to those farther off, bade them remain quietly where they were, while to those nearer he appealed in words not to make his departure one of tears by following him. They, judging that they should grant him this too, to go off as he wished, restrained themselves, weeping among one another. Only the council escorted him on his way, along with the high priest Eleazar and the general Joshua. When he reached the mountain called Abarim, a height lying opposite Jericho, from which one can look out over a very great expanse of the finest land of the Canaanites, he sent the council back. While he was still embracing Eleazar and Joshua and speaking with them, a cloud suddenly stood over him, and he vanished into a ravine. He wrote of himself in the sacred books that he had died, for fear that, because of the surpassing excellence of his character, people might dare to say that he had withdrawn to the divine. He lived in all 120 years, a third of which, less 1 month, he spent as leader. He died in the last month of the year, on the new moon of the month the Macedonians call Distris, and we call Adar. He surpassed in understanding all men who have ever lived, and made the best use of whatever he conceived. He was gifted in speech and in addressing crowds, and above all else, master of his passions, so much so that his soul seemed to hold none of them at all, and he seemed to know their very names only from observing them in others rather than experiencing them himself. As a general he ranked among the few, and as a prophet he had no equal, so that whatever he uttered seemed to be the very voice of God speaking through him. The people mourned him for 30 days, and no grief of such magnitude ever gripped the Hebrews as when Moses died. Nor was he missed only by those who had known him personally. Even those who simply read his laws felt his loss keenly, reckoning from them the surpassing measure of his virtue. Let this account of the end of Moses suffice for us.